Be sure with Pure. The Pure Oil Company presents H.V. Kaltenborn. Are you finding it hard to concentrate on your work these days? Then here's a suggestion for a quick cure. Get out in your car and go. But first, make sure your car is cured of its spring fever, too. Get that lazy, logy, winter-weary feeling out of your car with Pure Oil's complete bumper-to-bumper changeover service. Every car needs all these services to get set for summer driving, and your nearest Pure Oil dealer is the man to do the job right. You'll save time and money by putting your car in shape for summer the Pure Oil way, and you can get something for yourself besides. Pure Oil dealers are now offering a bargain as a bonus with their bumper-to-bumper changeover service. It's a fitted picnic hamper, a $2 retail value for only 98 cents with the changeover. See your Pure Oil dealer for details on how to get it at his station. And now, H.V. Kaltenborn.
Good evening, everybody. The president conferred today with his principal advisors on defense. He asked their advice on what must be done to speed the production of heavy bombing planes for Britain. On the basis of the advice he received today, the president knows that it is one thing to order more speed, but quite another to secure it. In the production of airplanes, we have reached the limit unless, and here is the unless materials now assigned to private manufacturers for private purposes are repossessed and turned over to airplane manufacturing plants. Unless trained technicians employed by private enterprise and in less essential defense enterprises are released to the airplane industry. Unless experienced foremen and supervisors trained in operations with some relation to aircraft production are made available to the airplane industry. Unless there is a cessation of strikes in plants producing airplane materials or airplane parts. Unless there is decisive action to force much more subcontracting throughout the aircraft industry. Unless the president can make much more clear than he has so far the immediate urgency of all these departures from our normal way of life. It is perfectly evident that the administration in Washington has received news which indicates that we must speed our help to Britain if it is to be made effective. Secretary of the Navy Knox and Secretary of State Hull have minced no words in telling us these things. Tonight, Secretary of War Stimson will have his turn, but no member of the cabinet is able to speak as forcefully or as persuasively as the president himself. Britain's representatives in the United States and in Great Britain are doing their best to drive home the urgency of Britain's situation without striking any note of apprehension or panic. When the Premier of Australia arrives in the United States tonight from London, it is quite likely that he will seek to make clear to us the changed situation that results from Hitler's conquest of Greece and Yugoslavia. In London today, Foreign Secretary Eden appealed to the United States to use its influence to have air give Britain Irish bases for the Battle of the Atlantic. The Foreign Secretary said, if Hitler wins there, he wins the war. Eden described Britain's position in relation to air as fantastic. He claimed that British use of bases at Bearhaven and Lochswilly would transform the submarine war overnight. His words on American help were these. The United States is today helping us greatly in many spheres and many ways. The more fully, the more rapidly, the more certainly that help can reach the battlefields in Asia, Africa, and Europe, the shorter will be the duration of the war. In the United States, Senator Pepper told the Senate that the American people are ready to spill their blood to prevent dictators from ruling the earth. He urged the United States to get tough by cooperating with Britain in the occupation of Greenland, Iceland, the Azores, the Cape Verde Islands, the Canary Islands, Dakar in West Africa, and Singapore in the Far East. On Singapore, he echoed the advice given to the United States by Hallett Arbenz, longtime New York Times correspondent in China, and one of the ablest students of the Far East. In his book, Japan Unmasked, Arbenz says, once Japan makes an assault upon that key position, it will be too late for us to get there. We did not send our fleet westward to or toward Singapore because we feared such an action might anger Japan to the point of a declaration of war. Our refraining from action may go down in history as another blunder of the democracies trying to avert an inevitable conflict. In the House of Representatives today, that body refused to prohibit the transfer of confiscated German and Italian ships to Great Britain. Members of the House declared before the vote that such a transfer would be an act of war and that it ought to be specifically prohibited before the House votes to authorize the confiscation of these ships. By a vote of 161 to 131, the House declared itself willing to face whatever risks were involved in that procedure. In both House and Senate today, it became evident that there is growing apprehension about the imminence of war. Joseph Stalin has replaced V.M. Molotov as Soviet premier. Stalin has assumed his new duties as chairman of the Council of the People's Commissars, in addition to his position as general secretary of the Central Committee of the Communist Party. Molotov will henceforth devote himself exclusively to his duties as foreign minister. On its face, this shift implies no change in Soviet policy. If anything, it emphasizes Russia's desire to remain neutral. Instead of working from behind the scenes, Stalin now steps to the front of the stage as the Soviet premier. But we should remember that Stalin has personally participated in every important act of recent Soviet foreign policy. He favored Litvinov's policy of collaborating with the League of Nations on behalf of the principle of collective security, while that policy presented advantages to Soviet Russia. When Stalin saw that France and Britain, by their policy of appeasement, had strengthened the dictators, he turned to them. Litvinov was replaced by Molotov as foreign commissar. 4 months later, in August 1939, Joseph Stalin made the pact with Adolf Hitler, which cleared the way for the Nazi attack on Poland. This is what we mean when we say that Soviet Russia gave the signal for the beginning of the World War. As Premier of the Soviet Union, Stalin will serve as Chairman of the Council of People's Commissars. This means that he will preside over the sessions of the Russian cabinet and will be in the most direct touch with its actions and policies. It is quite possible that Molotov wished to be relieved of this burden. The Moscow radio, which a few hours ago announced Molotov's retirement, emphasized the burdens of his dual role. Foreign policy is now Soviet Russia's dominant concern. Hitler's advance in the Balkans threatens the peace of Russia. Stalin is under no illusion as to Hitler's purpose. He knows that before long, Hitler must have more oil and more food to remain the master of Europe. Russia has both. Stalin has the choice between two policies. He can continue to cooperate with Hitler in further acts of international brigandage. Europe's two powerful international highwaymen can agree to share Turkey, Syria, Iran, Transjordania, Palestine, India, or any combination of these territories. Turkey might even be brought into the partnership and given a share of the loot. This is probably the policy Stalin would like to adopt if he were sure of purchasing immunity from invasion by such a course. But he is not sure. Stalin's chief purpose is to remain at peace while preserving Russia's territorial integrity or expanding his domain. But we know that Stalin is seriously concerned over Germany's conquest of the Balkans. Every step that has been taken in foreign policy by Soviet Russia during the past few months indicates this apprehension. Russia seized Bessarabia and Bukovina from Romania without first receiving Germany's consent. She has continued to encourage Turkey to resist German aggression. She rebuked Bulgaria for permitting German troops to enter that country. She signed a mutual assistance pact with Yugoslavia a few days before Hitler invaded that country. She signed a non-aggression pact with Japan to be free in the Far East if and when Hitler attacks her in Europe. She announced that Hitler was sending troops to Finland, which Hitler himself denied. During the May Day celebration a few days ago, Stalin himself emphasized Russia's policy of defense against involvement in the war and a full mobilization of Russian strength against all surprises. Soviet troops have been transferred from the Far East to Russia's Balkan frontiers. As premier, Stalin is in the best position to direct Russian mobilization. We must never forget that the Communist Party sees the present conflict as the second imperialist war in which the capitalist empires will destroy one another. And then, when the process is completed, Soviet Russia and the Communist Party will inherit the earth. That is why most Americans welcome today's decision to send no more machine tools to Germany. That is why most Americans will not weep because 100 Russian purchasing agents find no more to do in the United States and must now make their way home. That is why Americans will be wise to do no wishful thinking about today's news from Moscow. Haile Selassie is back in Addis Ababa, welcomed today by General Cunningham. The Emperor of Ethiopia has returned to his capital, the first ruler to be ousted from power by fascist aggression is the first to be returned to power. Great Britain, under Baldwin, tolerated the rape of Ethiopia in a vain gesture of appeasement towards the dictators. The Great Britain of Winston Churchill has restored Ethiopia's independence in a successful gesture of atonement. Thus, the first country to succumb to fascist aggression is also the first to be set free from fascist rule. Those who believe in the ultimate triumph of justice over force have the right to see a good omen in this historic restoration. Haile Selassie returns to his throne 5 years after he fled before the fascist invader. Even the Italians were able to conquer the barefooted, poorly armed Ethiopians. Personal bravery was no match for bombing planes and poison gas. Britain and France combined to sell out the League of Nations in Ethiopia by driving Mussolini's fascists out of Ethiopia. Britain has eliminated the first unhappy consequence of the ill-fated appeasement policy. She has begun to make amends for the most mistaken foreign policy ever followed by the British Empire. Those of us who deplored and criticized that policy have the right to recall it, even at a time when Great Britain needs and deserves our sympathy and help. For there are men in Britain, just as in the United States, who continue to believe in appeasing dictators. Good night.